way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live. About 6 minutes late, and you guys know how I feel about being late. I don't like it at all. I have an allergy to being late. I'm the guy that when you tell me to be at a place at 5 o'clock, I'm usually there at about 4:30 to 4:40, unless my travel time is impaired by other individuals. So I don't like to be late. But when it comes to being late or a lot of things, you have things called excuses and you have things called reasons, right? And excuses are just like, well, we all know what excuses are like. But reasons are like these things actually occurred in such a way that it made it necessary. And in this case, it's a pretty big and very good announcement. I've been working on this for a while. As many of you guys know, in the past, I've interviewed some authors, including Miles Lugosi, which is his book, Whistling Past the Graveyard. And I got to interview one of my heroes, Jim Shockey, about a year and a half ago on his book, Call Me Hunter, which I thought was a fantastic book. And Jim, of course, hugely known from the Outdoor Channel stuff and, you know, all the way back into like writing for magazines that I read when I was a little kid. And so that was a great thing. And that put me in touch with a publisher representative at Simon & Schuster. And I've been working on getting another author. You may know his name on the show. And that gentleman's name is Brad Thor. Brad will be, this was a work-in. They asked if I could do it. I'm leaving for Colorado next week. I'm like, I can do it Monday if you can do it. And they said, yeah, we can work that. And we worked it in. So Brad will be on with me live, standard time for the show, 12 Central Standard Time or Central Daylight Time this time of year, live here on the show next week. That will be the only live show that will be only new content next week and the following week. I will be gone for about 2 weeks up in Colorado in Estes Park. So I think this should be fun. If you don't know who Brad Thor is, you're probably like, so what, right? But a lot of you do know who he is. Brad Thor is a best-selling author. He writes stuff kind of like the American. His primary character, Scott Harvath, is like the American version of James Bond, I guess, in some ways. It's a really great thriller fiction with a lot of factual, a lot of real information from insiders, special operations and things like that. Lots of information on weapon systems and stuff like that. It's really cool. And when I say bestseller, like people are like, oh, you wrote a bestseller. Hey, you wrote 26 of them. Dude wrote 26 novels. Every single one hit the bestsellers list. And he's got a new one that's coming out right now. And it'll be actually dropping on June the 16th. And it's called Choke Point, and I actually have a copy of it. I was bragging a little bit with it last week that I have a copy. I've got mine, but you can't get yours yet type of thing. So I just want to let you guys know that out of the gate. Yeah, that's what was going on. So somebody, Mick, says he's like a Tom Clancy kind of writer. In fact, yeah, I'm going to tell you that when he was first coming up, that's what they were kind of marketing him as, and I don't think it was like the company or the publisher or him. His readers were calling him the next Tom Clancy, and that's going back almost 20 years. Here's a cool story about Brad Thor. Many of you guys don't know the original connection between me and Brad, but Brad's actually been here to my place. There was a prepper expo that I spoke at in Arlington, Texas back, I believe, in 2013. It was either 2013 or 2014. And Brad actually came here to my after party for that convention. So that's last time I saw him, only time I saw him, but he actually did hang out with us for a while, had a few drinks around the campfire and things like that. Anyway, what are we going to be talking about today, though? This is going to be one of those shows where it's probably going to piss people off. And it's also going to be kind of an I told you show, I told you so show in a way. Though I'm not really doing it for that, but I've got a list of a lot of bullet points of things that I've said going back to 2008 that nobody wanted to hear when I said them. And then it turned out to be exactly what I said would occur did. And I'm doing that because today's show is actually titled There Is No Exit, So You Better Build. And I say that with all deference and respect to my good friend John Bush. And I love the efforts he's trying to make with his whole concept of exit and build. And he's not the only one. You know, he's the guy that invented that term, that marketing phrase, but he's certainly not the only one pushing that idea. I've pushed that idea, and I've simply come to a conclusion after almost 20 years in this space that we aren't exiting. There's nowhere to exit to. There's no off-ramp. There isn't one. There's no parallel economies. There's some gray markets, and there's some black markets, and there always will be, and there always has, but they're not going to replace Amazon. You're not going to get all your shit from your neighbors. You're not going to move to a libertarian compound. No one's coming to save you. No one's even going to try to save you. There's just the intellectual masturbation, the mental masturbation of someday, man, we're all going to do the thing. And how long do you watch people talk about doing the thing, try to do the thing, make efforts to do the thing, try to put the thing together before you go, maybe the thing's not coming. You know, this isn't the Wright brothers trying to figure out how to fly an airplane. If this was going to be a thing, it would be a thing by now. And there may be some examples of people that have built some little communities and all that kind of sort of held together. Most of them are not places I'd want to be, and they're not places most of you guys would want to be either. And if those folks make their thing work, that's fine. They're still going to be buying shit from Amazon. They're still going to be using the internet to watch videos on YouTube. Like, they're not going to completely separate, and they're going to have to be really smart about how they do things. I'm all for building a local community. I love the way Nicole Sauce has done it. You know, we've tried to build some community around here as well, with just getting to know people. But the reality is we are, Mick brings up Free State. This has been going on for 20 plus years. I spoke at their events multiple times. I've keynoted for them twice. It isn't doing the thing. It's made some inroads, but that move of 20,000 people, all those people that pledged to go, they're not going. The time between when they came up with the idea and people started putting their name on the contract and the time that they actually got the signatures was so far. You go 10, 15 years in your life as a young adult, you go from 25 to 35 or 40-ish, you've built something. You're not leaving now. So these things aren't going to, and I'm not saying this to like demotivate anybody. I'm saying we have got to start coming to grips with one of my laws of life. It's actually Law 11 and Laws of Life 2. I just mentioned Brad Thor's book is coming out in June. Mine is coming out in June as well. So I think it's going to be the 22nd, sounds right in my head, but it might get moved a little bit depending on some things that I'm dealing with this week. But Law 11 of Laws of Life Book 2 is that it doesn't matter how things should be. It matters how things are. That's what we have to deal with. We have to deal with the way things are. So if we're not going to exit, then we need to build, but we can still sort of exit. I'm going to talk about that today too. But I'm going to begin with this laundry list of things I told you that many of you will be like, I don't remember that because I wasn't here. This is all on record. I looked up the dates to make sure I was right. Every bit of this you can look up if you care to, and we'll go through that in just a minute. Before we do, though, I want to talk about a sponsor that's been around as long as most of these predictions. Some of them came from 08, but I got one here from 2009. That's the fourth most old prediction. And this sponsor, KnifeKits.com, became a sponsor in 2009. That's a while in the age of podcasting. I don't think most podcasts last that long, let alone sponsor relationships. And I'm talking about KnifeKits.com, a company that does what it says and says what it does. Right there in the title, you can get all your kits for making knives at KnifeKits.com. You can also get raw material. You can forge your own blades. There's lots of things you can do with KnifeKits. But if you want to just get started out, they're kind of the place to do it because you can pick up that kit knife, maybe pick up some specific material for your handles, you know, get a book or a DVD or just watch some videos online, and you can get that knife built. And I'm really going to tell you guys, I think it makes a lot of sense for you guys that have kids. Especially, do this with girls too, but dads and sons or uncles and nephews or granddads and grandsons, build a knife with those kids and maybe build one on your own first, get it down a little bit and learn from the first experience and then maybe build one together or build the two of the same knives together. That would be really cool. Maybe even engrave it or something like that and create a legacy like that. It doesn't have to be perfect. I can tell you right now, if I had a knife that I had made with either my grandfather Rex or my grandfather Andrew, either one of them, I would cherish that. You would never get it out of my hands. And I'll tell you something else that's hard to get out of my hands is biltong. Yeah, when I have biltong, I'm not really very sharing, caring type of person. I'm more of a hiding under the blanket with a flashlight and an eating it type of person. And I get my biltong from Anton over at biltongusa.com. You got to check this stuff out. And my favorite is actually not the classic biltong. I like it. But what I like even better are the biltong sticks. These are thinner pieces of meat that are cured for longer, so they're a little bit crispy. They can seem a little bit tough to chew, but what I do with them is take a good pair of kitchen shears and cut them in little pieces about an inch long, half an inch long, and then they're like little meat peanuts. It's a perfect carnivore snack. Check them out. They also have the Drew Wars sausages, the Calabanazi sausages, and a lot of cool stuff that Anton imports from all over the world. So with that, let's get on into today's episode. Again, I'm going to start out today, and I know this might seem like I told you so, and I don't mean to be that way here. I really don't. I just, if I'm going to tell you some things are not as you think they are, if I'm going to tell you that a lot of the dreams that we have are not going to happen the way that we want them to, if I'm going to tell you things like, you know, you're not going to stop AI and that's going to piss a bunch of you off, or that you're not going to care about data centers in 4 or 5 years, you're just not going to care about them at all, then I think it's important that we go back through this 18-year history I have, because June 20th will be officially 18 years of the show. So I've been on the record for 18 years. Here's some of the things, and I'm sure I left stuff out. But in 2008, within weeks of starting the show, I said, get out, get out, get out of the stock market. The stock market is going to crash, and it's going to crater. You're going to lose half the value overnight. It's going to happen. Just move out of the way. Put your money in cash. If it's in a 401k, go to your cash fund, your bond fund, whatever, the most conservative thing in it, and just wait. And the market crashed by almost 60% by February of 2009. I got emails from people that were literally in tears because they convinced their parents to do it, and they did, and their parents were still able to retire because they did. I'm on the record with that. 2008, I also said, when people were like all jazzed up about the election, it's over, guys. Sorry, Obama's going to win. I know you don't like it. I know I don't like it, but it's going to happen. And I even said he would get reelected in 2012 in a landslide before he got elected the first time, which he did. Okay. And then in 2008, I said also that this whole 10 years to act on global warming was nonsense. And that nothing would happen at all that would be of any consequence over the next 10 years. And I know a lot of you guys there, like, so what? Everybody knows that. We all know this. Yeah, but in 2008, when I started this show, even my own people, that was not so much a thing. I got so much hate mail. You just wait and see. It's been 18 years of 10 years to act, and absolutely nothing has happened. And the first time we had 10 years to act was 1989. So I wasn't a genius. I wasn't clairvoyant. I just looked at a tracker and said, we've already had 20 years of 10 years to act. I bet you we have 20 more years of 10 years to act. And you know we have now 10 years to act. But you don't hear much about that. It kind of all went away. Have you heard much about global warming other than a few people that just can't shut up? Like, have you heard any major push for it recently? No? I think there's a reason. Then in 2009, I said, we are not about to become the North American Union. There would be no Amero as currency. It was all a conspiracy theory, and it was all nonsense. And landslides of emails telling me how stupid I was. I was a shill for George Soros and the globalists. I was a simp for them, on and on and on. See, I've been through this pattern with y'all before. And what there's no North American Union. There was never going to be a North American Union. NAFTA, or what are they, the what was the new one? The new one Trump did eventually, like the redo of NAFTA, like, but no Amero, no North American Union, bullshit, not going to happen. Lots of angry people over that one. Insults, names, cursing me out. You don't know shit. Okay, fine. Then I said in 2010, so we're in the middle of Obama's first administration. You tell me in the comments here, somebody has to be live streaming that remembers this prediction that long ago. I said in 2016, you would get a Republican strongman as president that would get things done that no Democrat could ever get done. But they would be actually very much Democrat policies, but they would be cheered on by Republicans. How How the fuck did I know that? Because cycle. Yeah, yeah, USMCA. That's what it was called, right? Sounds like the Marine Corps, right? But yeah, Nick says he remembers, right? I said, I'm telling you, 2010, you're going to get a Republican strongman in 2016. No one will expect somebody no one would even think would ever be president, and he will be very effective at getting things done. Now, what I didn't see was the two non-consecutive terms and two impeachments so far, and like 20,000 freaking assassination attempts or whatever. But hey, that's pretty good shit, isn't it? In 2010, I also said that the Food Safety and Modernization Act would not ban you from saving seeds, bartering vegetables with your neighbor, etc. Now, a lot of people today go, so what? You don't remember. You don't remember what it was like when that law was going through in 2010. Alex Jones was on the radio. You won't even be able to trade tomatoes with your neighbor. They're going to ban saving seeds. I'm telling you right now, they're going to say that any garden is a farm. And I'm like, this is stupid. That's not what the law says. That's not what's going to happen. And again, floods of emails came in telling me I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm an idiot, I'm a simp for big agriculture. Me, I'm a simp for big agriculture. It's amazing. You speak out against the actual things that are actually going on for years. You think you build some credibility up. You say, guys, this isn't what you think it is. All of a sudden, you're a simp for the people you've waged war on for freaking years. But that's what happened, isn't it? Anybody remember that one? If you want to find that track, go to the survivalpodcast.com, search for tester, like a testing piece of equipment, T-S-T-E-R. You will find a post that I did about the tester amendment to this law that made it abundantly clear that it wasn't going on. And the thing right before it in the blog, you can read my whole take on that. And I said it was all bullshit. Again, I got attacked, called the simp, cursed at, et cetera. And what happened? Can you trade your tomatoes today? Did they ban saving seeds in it? Did they tell you you're not allowed to, you know, give figs to your neighbor and get eggs? Did any of that happen? No, it didn't. Okay. Then in 2010, I also told you the movie Gasland was a con job. You guys sent me the videos and the guy's got the garden hose and the flames are coming out of it. And this is what's happening and the fracking is causing it. And all these terrible things are going to happen. Well, the movie was revealed to be a complete piece of propaganda and a con job that came out of, surprise, surprise, left-wing think tanks attached to people like George Soros again, right? And I think you should always look at where the money comes from to fund these resistance movements that look like they are grassroots when they're actually astroturfed. I'm just saying, like, that's come up a few times. But 16 years later, not one prediction in Gasland has happened. Not one. And I remember when this was going on, this was when I actually was like, I think this movie itself was a con job, but there's something here. And then it just so happened I ended up at a workshop that Nick Ferguson ran out at his place. And there was a guy there that was a geoengineer that did fracking for a living. And he spent 8 hours with one guy convinced that Gasland was true and everything was awful. And they spent 8 hours on a whiteboard when we taught class. They were like in the back by themselves. And I got little pieces and parts of it. But at the end, this zealot for it said, he's right. He's explained everything and I can't break it. He's right. Okay. Just a coincidence. Then in 2013, I said, that's the first year I said, start buying Bitcoin. 2013 is when I first said that. And I said, ignore the noise and just stack sats. I wasn't a Bitcoin maximalist. I was open to other cryptos for about six more years. But that's when I said, like, I don't care what else you do. Buy Bitcoin, buy it all the time, DCA it, just put it away and forget about it. And you told me I was stupid. It was tulip mania. But I'm just saying. I want to know who else has an 18-year record like this that they can point to it and have it all documented, by the way. In 2013, I also said that was the first time I said the decade between 2020 and 2030 would be the largest decade of shift and flux that any living person has ever seen. That we would get what felt like 50 years of transformation in 10. I'm going to tell you, I think I got that one wrong by 5 years. I think it's 2025 to 2035, and I think COVID slowed it down and sped it up, if that makes any sense at all. But that's pretty damn good, okay? And look, this person here says it's just a long-ass brag. Well, tell me what I got wrong, man, or just, you know, cry. I don't care. I'm not here for you. I'm here for the people that want to hear this. Then I said in 2015, remember this one? Jade Helm. Jade Helm, the hype over that got so bad, I basically had a bro divorce from Stuart with Oath Keepers. I was a founding member of Oath Keepers. It was an important organization to me. I invested money and time and resources and promoted it. And Stuart jumped on Alex Jones's show and started shrieking about Jade Helm. It's martial law. It's about, and I said, this is nonsense. And I literally divorced myself from Oath Keepers over it because it was so over the top ridiculous. And again, I'm a simp for the state. I love Big Brother. I got the insults. I got the emails. And I said, okay, wait and see. And do you notice that most of these things you don't even think about anymore? You don't even care about? I'm telling you, there's things going on right now that you're very upset about that in a few years you're not even going to think about again. When somebody brings it up, you're like, oh, yeah, I sort of remember that. And you'll pretend that you didn't buy into it. That's what's going to happen. But Jade Helm was not a backdoor. I said that in 2015. Has the test float happened yet to where they actually – okay. Anyway, then in 2017, when Trump came in and repealed net neutrality that had been in place for like a minute from Obama toward the end, right? I said that repealing net neutrality would have no effect whatsoever on anything. I explained it from a technical standpoint, including my background in telecom and building out the networks the fucking internet actually runs on. I also just basically said nothing is going to happen. And you, again, you're a simp for big tech. You know, people won't be able to access small websites. You'll have to pay extra to be able to use Netflix. Well, when I posted about this recently, you know, somebody said, they were being facetious and sarcastic. I actually know two people that died from the net neutrality. They're still in a lot of pain, even though they're dead, shit like that. What happened? Exactly what I said would happen. Absolutely square root fuck all of nothing happened. Okay? Then in 2020, when COVID just was kicking up, I said that COVID was basically like a bad flu. You should just ignore it and go on with your life unless you were an at-risk person, like really old or had lots of comorbidities or something like that. Not to be afraid of it. Defy lockdowns. Defy everything you legally could without ending up in jail and go on with your life. And I gave you a list of things that you could take that would improve your immunity. Freaking colleges, medical colleges came out 2 months after me with the exact prescription that I gave. And I think anybody right now that's convinced that we really had, you know, hospitals overwhelmed, adding on to morgues, refrigerator trucks, any of that bullshit they told you, anybody that believes that now, you probably have had about 57 vaccines and your blood is clotting, right? Any person who is rational at this point can look back and say, yeah, we were had. Right? When they showed the Chinese people in paper suits falling over in the fucking street and shit, get out of here. Get out of here. And it looks so ridiculous now. But when I said it at the time, oh my God, everybody lost their mind. You don't know. It's turning people's lungs to hamburger. It was a bad cold for 99% of people who got it. Period. If you weren't 85 or older, if you didn't have like 17 comorbidities, it was the cold. And I know because I had it twice, at least. And yeah, the nurses were doing dances and all that shit. And you don't understand how dangerous it is. My cousin's former roommate, uncle's, you know, fucking adopted chihuahua died from it. People were getting rid of their dogs during this. And I said, what? Just don't worry about it. Deal with the government bullshit, but the disease itself, don't worry about it. You tell me if I was right. And if you say I'm not about this, again, I think that you... My wife has a theory that people that got lots of the stabby stabs had a change to their mental cognition, and it's part of the crazy we see today. And I think that my wife is kind of spot on about that if you look at some of the science behind it. Then in 2020, while all that was going on, I said something else that I was shouted down for and told to shut up about, right? Get out, get out, get out of the cities. For months. And I finally said, okay, I've said it long enough. You're on your own now. And then it took a couple more months, and then the reality came. And what I had said was, you're not going to be able to do it very soon. Not because they're going to lock you in the cities, but people tried to make that's what I was saying. I said, because you're not going to be able to afford to. The cost of real estate is about to go up so exponentially, especially in those little sweet spots where you're close enough to still work in the city, but you don't live there. It's going to become almost impossible to buy property like that. Did I get it wrong? Did I get it wrong? I don't think I did. And then in 2022, I said, back to Bitcoin. This is the accumulation trough. You can actually look up an episode that was something like, it will never be easier to stack sats than it is right now. And it was in early 2022. That's when everything converged, right? Because we had Fountain and people were just throwing sats around. You were getting paid decent amount of sats just to listen. Now I think you get 10 sats a day you can get listening on Fountain. But back then, I mean, just by listening to the same podcast you had, people were making 300, 400, 500 sats a day. Podcasters like me, we were making, you know, 10,000, 20,000 a day with people streaming to us and all. Fold had just come out. Fold was just throwing sats at people in the beginning. Fold's still a good deal. The Fold card's great. Get the Fold actual credit card now. 1.5% cash back. And you can pay your bill with your phone. So it's, there's no interest or anything. Like it would, but you could, you back then, man, you could just daily spin and stuff like freaking sats were cheap. So everybody's throwing them around. Bitcoin was at $14,000 when I did that episode. And I said, this is it. This is before it takes off. This is your opportunity you said you wanted. This is the accumulation trough. Get it. I don't know. What's it today? 77, 78,000. I don't know. It could go down to 50 or 60,000 before we come out of the next cycle, but I'm just saying maybe it would have been a good idea to listen to that advice at the time. Again, this is all documented. And then in 2025, just a year ago, I told you all the people that funded No Kings and I was shot down. You're a simp for Orange Man. You suck orange thong, right? Except the other word was used. Anybody that listens to the show knows I was never a simp for Trump. Still not. Right? Like Trump is what Trump is, like any politician. I believe in being truthful, but what I said was it was funded by the Soros Foundation, the Tides Foundation, et cetera. I named all of it. I posted the receipts. And like a year later, Fox News does an expose on it and says, look at who's actually funding this. Yeah, no shit. Like if I could figure that out a year ago, so could you. And then I just have one more question for you guys. Why did you guys all stop freaking out about Real ID? Isn't that still a big deal to you? Because I haven't heard anything about Real ID in 6 months. I'm just saying there is a continuous cycle of hype designed to grab your attention, to make you really angry, to make you think you're fighting something, and generally what you think you're fighting, you're not. I know you're going to get upset with me right now, but that's what I'm telling you about AI data centers. You think you're fighting government surveillance by fighting the existence of a data center, and that's great if you're the people building the surveillance apparatus, because no one's actually focused on the things that you do that allow for surveillance. They're fighting a building, which isn't going to prevent it. Most of the surveillance you're concerned about already exists. I'm going to tell you what's going to come. You want to know what's going to come from this AI data center build out? Same shit that I said would happen. By the way, I forgot that on my list. Cannabis, legalized cannabis. Boom, glut, bust. Cannabis won't go anywhere. We'll have more of it than ever. But tons of people building up the infrastructure to grow it will exceed the demand on the demand side of it. And the price will cave in for the growers, if not for the retailers. Retailers are going to do what the retailers are going to do. But the growers are going to experience a boom, glut, bust. You know what else did that? Fiber optics in the 90s, early 2000s. Quest, Caprock, all these companies down here. I was doing work for these people in outside plant construction in the mid-90s. We were putting in fiber everywhere. If you live on the Fort Worth side of the Metroplex and of Dallas-Fort Worth, and you're using the internet right now, there's a good chance that at least some of the cable your signal's going over, I or my crews put in the freaking ground or up on the poles, right? And you know how much fiber they put in? A lot of it's still dark. Quest made deals with the railroads. They were laying freaking fiber, long haul, single mode along the railroad tracks and shit. Guys were coming in. They were like talking about all, like into our office and talking about all this bandwidth they were going to sell. And that's why we were doing these projects and everything. And like, it was overbuilt. It was overbuilt. It was a gold rush. Whoever had the infrastructure would own the future. And somebody did, but a lot of people lost. So the internet didn't go away, right? Optical fiber hasn't gone away, but there's a lot of it dark. Right now, those data centers, a lot of those data centers are being built because of this belief in enterprise growth of AI products, the products that you will use, whether you want to or not, when you sit down at the office you work at. That's what they're building for. And a lot of it's going to be very successful. There's going to be way more of it than we need. And a lot of the data centers you're worried about won't even be there in 10 years. Or whatever's in them won't be what it is now. It won't be an AI data center. There's only so much compute we're actually going to need for this. And but that's how we know it is for surveillance. Again, the surveillance you're worried about already exists. I've seen it. And a data center is a building with computers in it. It's nothing. Well, it's going to cause all these health problems or whatever. I was building data centers in the 90s and early 2000s and consulting on them and designing them as well. We Bitcoin mining centers are data centers. AWS is data centers. YouTube and Google run on data centers, and they have for 25 years. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. So now what we need to do is figure out, well, what do we do if this is reality? Like, you're not going to stop things. You're not going to create this libertarian utopia in frickin' Nebraska or something with a giant, you know, 10,000 acre compound with high fence around it with guards standing out there that don't let the government in. Like, none of that's going to happen. You're not going to have a parallel economy that's going to fulfill even 5% of your needs, let alone all of them. Then what do we do? What do we actually do if those things won't work? Because I don't believe in pointing to problems without talking about solutions. So one of the most important things, if you have questions, I've got this one. It's the only question I've marked today. Put the word question or comment in all caps, and I'll come back at the end and try to talk about it. So I will answer yours there, Ernie, but that's the only one I've seen so far. I'm by myself today. I got one eye, so I'll miss things if you don't put all caps there. So with that, let's talk about what do we do? Well, number one, there is this ongoing kind of dumbass thing that people do. We're not a democracy. We're a republic. And I understand what you're trying to say, but you're usually failing when you do so, because the United States is a republic and it is a democracy. It is both. We're a constitutional republic in the form of a representative democracy, if you want it by the textbook. But we are a republic, and we are one of the few true republics. There's something like 88 countries that are republics. North Korea is a republic. Doesn't exist anymore, but the Soviet Union was a republic. It was right in the name. Okay, so republics aren't magical. But the beauty of a true republic means that the members that make up the republic, in this case states, could be provinces, right? Those individual states have a significant amount of autonomy, and their governments must be in a republican form. Nothing to do with the Republican Party. In other words, the state of Texas has to act like a republic. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania can call itself a commonwealth, but it must act like a republic. The Commonwealth of Virginia can call itself a commonwealth, but it must act as a republic. It must have a two-house legislature. It must have an executive branch, a judicial branch, and a legislative branch with separation of powers. Okay. Then within each state, since states have less resources than the federal government, there's a limit on their powers beyond just what they can, you know, want, right? They have certain limitations on enforcement and things like that. But there's also their own state constitution, which much mimic the constitution of the republic itself and place additional restrictions on government and safeguard additional freedoms of government. And what this has created is a country that is, first of all, geographically massive, but the difference in what you can and can't do is dramatic sometimes if you move across the street or down the road. Where I live, if I want to build a second home on my 3 acres, I can literally just go do it because I already have a septic system. If I needed another septic system put in, then I would, you know, wasn't going to share it. I would have to pay $500 to get a permit for a septic system for the new house. And then once I did that, no one would ever bother me. I don't even have building codes where I live. 1 mile down the road is a development that was annexed by the city of Lakeside that none of that applies. You have to have the man come out and bless everything. And when the framing's done, that inspector comes out. When the plumbing's done, that is, and all the shit. And you can't have that many windows on that side of the house because for some reason that's a fire risk and all the bullshit, right? You need a freaking air vent for your downflow and your drain in your sink, even though it doesn't actually do anything, especially when you're on a septic with a passive feed. Like, all this bullshit. Just don't have to do it. Don't have to pull any permits from a mile. So how much difference can it make by moving to a different state or a different county? And the answer is a lot. So I was playing around and I'm thinking about actually doing a show just on that subject alone, calling it the new settler or something like that. And it comes from the concept that I think that all buyers in real estate are settlers. That's my whole methodology on how you sell real estate, is since every buyer settles, that's the 1% effect. You make your property in its price range 1% better than everything else in the price range, and you'll sell your property fast because every buyer settles. The guy with a $300,000 budget settles. The guy with a $3 million budget settles, right? But what if we take settling a little bit differently? You're never going to get 100% of what you want, but if you identify geographically the best place to go, what you settle for is a hell of a lot better than what you have. And then, of course, settling, that's what people did when they came to this country, is they moved across it, picked out places, and settled there. So settling can be more than one thing. And again, keep putting questions. That's not the word question in all caps. It's all the words in all caps, dude. I found it anyway, but question or comment in all caps, then your question or your thing you want me to comment on. So we need to use that to our advantage. You know, I moved to a place, like, this was a very calculated move. People ask me, like, with everything you know about permaculture, why do you settle for a place with so much rock? Because the rock was less of an impediment to me than the government. Not only did I pick an unincorporated place, I picked a undesirable unincorporated place. To get us, and there's a few really nice houses here, you have to take a whole bunch of very low-end stuff that goes with us. And that means that if the city of Lakeside or the city of Azle decided to try to annex us, first, in Texas, you got to go through a pretty rigorous process. You have to get us all to vote for it. You can't just do it anymore. So that's nice. But that wasn't a place when I picked it out. No, I picked it as if one of those towns annexed us, that we would be a money suck. They would lose money by annexing us. So they ain't going to do it. Cities annex unincorporated areas because they gain in a tax base. If you have to provide more in services than you get out of it, it's a loss and it doesn't benefit you. So there's no real likelihood of these people doing this here, right? And I say look for things like that. I have a friend named Luke that lives just over there, and he said, I followed your model so perfectly that I ended up becoming your neighbor. I don't know that he even knew that's what was happening when he did it. It was like he just looked for all the things that worked out in the area, and he ended up right back over here. In fact, we just had my wife and I split a sourdough bagel this morning that his wife baked. So that was pretty cool. Next, the best way to get a tax cut? Vote for taxes to go down. Yeah, good luck with that shit. I mean, when it does, great, fine. But, you know, I'm going to get a bigger tax cut than you guys are going to get out of these tax cuts from Trump. Why? Because I use the ultimate tax code, not really cheat, tax code multiplier, I guess. I own and operate a business. There are so many things in the tax code that reduce your tax burden if you run a business that if you work for a living as a W-2 employee, they do not apply to you. Now, I'm not saying to go start a business to lose money. I don't believe in that. You can't do that sustainably for long. And the government won't let you. They'll eventually decide all your income is hobby income and you get none of the deductions and you have to pay tax on it. So you need to make, at least on paper, a profit. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that have a fucking lot of money coming out of their business in cash flow can have a very small tax footprint. If you actually look in real percentages, I probably pay less in tax than is my effective rate than people that make half the money I do. It's unfair. It's more important to understand how things are and will be instead of the way things should have been and should become, because it's what you want to happen has no impact whatsoever on what happens, right? No one cares what you feel. Okay. It doesn't matter that you feel it's unfair. You have to follow the incentives, and the incentives are run and operate a successful business and maximize the 90% of the tax code that tells you how to get out of what the 10% of the tax code says you have to pay. Because if you look at the size of the tax code, it looks like, if you're old enough to remember this, it looks like two, you know, like metro area phone books from the 1980s with the yellow pages and blue pages and white pages and all that shit from like a big city like Jacksonville, Florida or something. But the part that says what you have to do is in a little book that you used to be able to go pick up at the post office. This is how much money you make. This is how much money you have to pay. What do you think the rest of that shit says? The rest of that shit doesn't say, here's all the additional money you have to pay. It's here's all the ways that you can figure out how to not pay tax or pay less tax. It's completely legal. It's not a cheat. Right? People go, the rich are cheating. No, the rich are following the incentives that you think you're following and you're not. That's what's going on. So own and operate a business is one. Yeah, I know not everybody's going to do it, but it is the number one thing to give yourself additional economic freedom, tax freedom, and time freedom. Because you might work harder than you ever have, but you'll be doing it for yourself. And that changes everything. And when you really want the time, like I'm about to take 2 weeks and go to Colorado, I'm going to go swim with the sharks at the Denver Aquarium. Then I'm going to go up to Estes Park and play with elk. You know who can stop me from doing that? No one. No one. And I'm going to fly first class, and I'm going to work on my writing while I'm there, and it's going to be a business trip one way or another. I'm going to get footage. I'm going to put it out on the air. I'm going to write. I am going to build it into my lifestyle as a legitimate expense of travel. And it's completely legal. I'm not cheating. I'm following the incentives, and I'm going to fly first class too, because I feel as the owner of my business that my business owner and his executive assistant should fly first class, because I'd rather give the money to the airlines than to the government. And that came from Amy, as in Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. And when she explained it to me, she said, let me explain more. I'm like, no, you just used my own words against me. I'm adopting your philosophy. You're completely right. I was wrong. Thank you. That's what she said. You always fly first class, because then the bastards don't get the money. You know, if I did 10 trips a year, that might not happen. But, yeah, she's right overall. Next, AI is not going away, so you better learn to use it, because the people that you compete with are going to use it. And they're going to use it more effectively than you can imagine, because we're all going to learn how to use it more effectively, because it's going to become a modern survival skill. Knowing how to optimally use AI. You can shriek, you can yell, you can scream about a building with computers inside it. You can believe AOC when she tells you it destroys drinking water, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever. You can do whatever you want, but one thing you can't do is make it go away. I have two quotes for you at the end of today's episode, and one is really going to drive this point home. The quote is by Philip K. Dick. Some of you may know what the quote is. If you don't, you'll find out soon enough. But you better learn to use it, because it will not go away. The genie is not going back in the bottle. And I don't care what your job is. I don't care how blue collar it is. Sooner or later, it's going to impact and affect your industry, your niche, and your business. If you are, you know, 55 years old and you turn wrenches for a living or fix pools for a living or something like that, you can probably mostly ignore this. But if you're anybody else, if you are anybody in your 30s or younger, forget about ignoring this. I don't care what you do. There is no way out of it. And just because you're doing something now that is completely a manual labor thing doesn't mean that that's where you want to be for the rest of your life. Let me explain something to you guys, and this is going to be in my AI book, because that book's more about how to advance in your professional life and your personal life as well than it is about AI in and of itself. It's using AI as that tool to do that. And what you do to actually advance at work is start doing the next job in the chain one way or another. And it might not physically mean going in and taking it one way or another. You take work off your boss's desk, and take that as a metaphor, please. What I'm saying is you get as good as you can at what you do very quickly. Master your job. Most people do this, and then they work at becoming even better at what they do. So the people above you look down and say, boy, they're really a great level two technician. They're really great at being a level two technician. What does that mean? That means they're highly qualified at being a level two technician. It doesn't mean that they're highly qualified to manage other technicians. See how that works? The person that starts to actually do the next level of work, they legitimately do the work, stands apart. And somewhere in everything you ever do, if you have any advancement in you, you move more to the behind the desk mode, even if you're still in the field. You're doing the paperwork, you're doing the assessments, you're doing the evaluations, et cetera. And you don't want to spend your whole life never moving up to that level. And I mean, it's every cops. What happens when a cop makes sergeant, right? Do you think they spend all their time now in cars still running down leads and shit or something? No, they take on an administrative level role. I don't care where you go, any field, any niche, any place. Eventually you get into kind of an overseer role that involves paperwork. Paperwork's going to involve AI. So I don't care what it is. You better learn to use it. And if you are in a knowledge worker capacity, you are flatly fucked if you don't learn how to use it. And don't believe a lot of the hype that's going on around right now about it's just going to get rid of everybody. It's not. What it's going to do is put some people at deep disadvantage to others. Do with that as you will, okay? Bitcoin. I know a lot of you don't want to hear it. I think a lot of you don't want to hear it because you're bitter and you're angry that I told you this so long ago and you ignored it, and then you ignored it again, and then you ignored it again, and then you ignored it again. And there's so many people out there that we have built incredible wealth using it in a very simple way. And every day with a little more than you started with. That's it. That's the whole key. And it can't be that simple. And just because it worked for others doesn't mean it would have worked for me, even though I know it would have. So now I'm bitter and angry, and now I can never do it. Have fun staying poor. I'm sorry. Have fun staying poor, because that's all you're doing. Your money right now with standard inflation has about a 7-year half-life. 7 to 10 years is the half-life of the dollar. You can't save your way or work your way to wealth with money that acts that way. It cannot be done. So you do what you want with it, but it needs to be, and you need to understand what digital gold means, because most of you don't. When that term started to really fly around 2019, 2020, 2021, people took it to mean don't spend it, which I agree with to a point. Right? The money that you set aside long term with Bitcoin, don't sell it. There's always exceptions. There's exceptions where I've sold and bought back because I reset my basis. I took a tax loss. It's immune to the wash rule. So I was able to like knock down $10,000 of my income by making a sale and buyback in one day and, you know, paying a few fees and saving $10,000. So 30% tax rate, $3,000. By spending a couple hundred bucks, sure. And I certainly take Bitcoin when people want to pay me in it. I'm happy to. And I've paid for some things in Bitcoin, but always really new Bitcoin that like maybe I converted to it just because the person wanted that or something like that. But my real view is I'll give you dollars because I want to spend depreciating. I want to spend currency that inflates, and I want to hold deflationary currency, a currency that grows in value. So the currency of the dollar gets spent, and the currency of the Bitcoin gets held. That's the philosophy I'm suggesting you adopt. And that's what people thought that was it for gold. The problem is that people don't understand how gold was used in the banking system when gold was the standard. People don't understand that there was always leverage credits against gold, that there was always the idea that if I had gold and I had wealth, if it just sat in a vault, it didn't do anything for me. So somewhere or another, I had to put it to work. That's what Michael Saylor's doing with Bitcoin. The big shitcoin rants that were going around this weekend on X were freaking hysterical. He bought bonds. It's so over. Bitcoin's going to zero. This is a sign that he's going to dump, right? And when you hear he bought bonds, what do you think? Like treasuries, right? He bought bonds, like government bonds. That's not what he bought. Well, then, like, you know, municipal bonds at like 4% tax deferred. He bought his own bonds, you dumbasses. His convertible debt, essentially, he got a discount by paying off the debt early, saving millions of dollars in interest payments and reducing his debt load, reducing his liability side of the balance sheet. They made so much money, they bought their own debt. Do you know what that's like? That's like you going, hey, look, we only owe like $100,000 on our house. Let's pay the mortgage off in full early and save $50,000 more that we won't spend in interest payments over the last 10 years of the loan. So if you think it's bad that he bought his own debt back, you would say it's bad if somebody pays off their credit card bills, pays their car off early, pays off the mortgage of their house. It's asinine. What he's doing with credit instruments is he's holding an asset that appreciates at 30 to 40% across time and paying 10% on it. If you think that's foolish, you're not going to make it in the modern world, because this is the way out of the trap. You don't want to take the step, that's up to you. On that note, though, the dollar is not going to zero. I've been saying that for 20 years on the air, at least not against the rest of the world's currencies. The dollar will always trend towards $0 in value because that's the plan. It's designed. In a perfect world where the Fed gets its job perfectly correct and never messes up, you have 2% inflation and full employment. Now, let's ignore the fact that the Federal Reserve has never for any meaningful period of time ever met their mandate. That's their dual mandate. That's the only thing they're supposed to do. Control inflation and see to full employment. They've had that mandate since 1913 and they've never done it. And they generally do not hold inflation to 2%, especially if you look at the real inflation, not the fake numbers. And so that's not going to happen. So we're going to have our money lose a minimum of 2% value, minimum over time, period. So yes, it trends towards zero if you keep doing that long enough, but we also know it's not 2%. In a good period of time, it's more like 4. Go look at, like, I bought my first house in, I believe, 1997, and I paid $84,250 for it. I don't remember that because my memory is so good. I remember that because you remember when you become a homeowner and you buy your first house. It was like 1,798 feet, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, in a very nice neighborhood of Arlington, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas-Fort Worth. $84,250. You can't buy a mobile home without land. When they pull it off the lot, you can't buy a double wide decent mobile home for $84,000 today. What do you think that house is worth today? The house is actually showing the truth about the money. The house didn't become worth more. The money became worth less. So yes, it will trend down forever, which is why Bitcoin will trend up forever, but it will not go to zero. And boy, back when I started 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, that was another one I could put on there that I said that back then. Because people were like, where do I put my money? The dollar's going to zero. Stop. This is what I've always said about inflation on the currency. It is the opportunity cost of staying in cash so that you have the cash to act when the buying opportunity comes. That's what inflation needs to be looked at as. You need to have the vast majority of your wealth invested in something that grows in value over time, or you're going to lose. A significant portion of that should be in Bitcoin. That's been advised since 2013. But You do need cash on hand that you don't have to like pay a penalty for spending because you sold it and you made money on it. Now you got to give the government 60% of it. You have to wait to act, et cetera. And when you have cash on hand, you can do things like walk in and write a check and buy a car for $14,000 under dealer cost when Dodge shits their pants because COVID starts and thinks the whole world is going to end. So they say, here it is, come pick your color, and you go buy your dream car like I did. That's, and yes, that cash had an inflation burn against it, but having some cash is the opportunity cost in the inflation to be able to act when the opportunity comes up. You guys do what you want with this, but Bitcoin is digital gold, and it's being used exactly like digital gold, and that's what Strategy and Strife and Strike, et cetera, are doing, and that's what like 21 Capital is going to go a different way in the same type of thing, and that's where people are literally going to be leveraging Bitcoin to buy a house because you're better off doing that than getting a mortgage. That's what's going to happen. You can disagree all you want, but that's what's coming. And the dollar's not going to zero. There will be no meaningful cuts to government, and voting harder won't change anything. If you didn't learn that from Doge, the great Doge experiment, then you're not going to make it, right? NGMI, right? You're just not going to make it. Elon Musk goes in, sleeps on the floor, takes a bunch of freaking Ritalin-infused autists with him, crunches numbers, and finds waste. I mean, we knew it was bad. But the shit they found was so bad. And almost every cut ended up not being a cut. It just got moved to a different department. We got rid of USAID. Yay. And then all these other departments just absorbed the money. And all the cuts that were made just quietly came back. Now they're talking about finding fraud in Minnesota and finding fraud in California, right? But it's because the Republicans want to say, look at the Democrats committing fraud, which I'm sure they are. I also think there's a lot of fucking Republicans committing a lot of fucking fraud, too. Right. But there's no meaningful cuts coming. The fact that they throw somebody in jail for the money they stole from you that was spent on bullshit doesn't get the money back. And it doesn't mean more won't go out the window, because the only reason there was fraud is there's so much money that's available to be accessed through fraud. So if you clamp down on the fraud, you're just going to get more sophisticated ways that people obtain grants and things like that. And the money's still going to be spent. So you still don't have it. And it's still not going to fix anything for you. Your life won't get better because of $1 that's being spent that way. We actually can look mathematically at it. And it would actually be this case. If the government literally just took all the tax money and just like actually had it in printed bills and just started throwing it at random people, it would be far more efficient than what they do. There's actually been studies that have proven that to be the case. They're like just literally putting the money back into the economy and letting people do whatever they wanted to with it would be better than the waste that goes through the government layers. So you're not going to do it. It's not going to happen. You need to stop thinking that anything is going to get better because any election ever happens. I don't care who wins. Like people laugh, I think it should be Massey and Tulsi. Okay. And if they won, it still wouldn't change anything. It's just like you might feel better and they would do some things. I'd be like, that's great that they did that. I'm glad they did it. But in the macro economically, nope. We wouldn't be with war with Iran. Okay, sure. And you would still be bitching and you would still be complaining. And if you're 32 and you can't buy a house, you would still be saying that. You didn't do it when frickin' Biden was president. So it ain't Trump's fault. Whose fault is it? You don't know what it's like to be young. I don't know. My son's 36. He's married. He's got two kids. He makes a decent living, but not a lot. He makes about 60 something thousand a year. His wife makes about 30 as a medical assistant. They have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Well, that's because he's Jack Spierkel for a father. If Jack gave him everything, I didn't give him anything but advice. I didn't give him a dollar toward buying a house. I just gave him advice. I said, buy a house and stay in your, I worked out a budget with him. So this is what you can afford. Now go find a house. It's really hard. And what I got was, it's really hard to find a house for this price that works. And my response was, yes, it is. Keep looking. You'll find one. And then he did. And then he bought a house. So he's not a boomer. Okay. First, I'm a Gen X. My son's a millennial. How did he do it? Did he have magic? Right? It's nonsense. It's nonsensical. Grow up. You are in this alone. No one is coming to save you. So stop making it worse for yourself by denying that reality. And then the last thing is, like I said, no one's coming to save you. The good news is you don't need saving from anything except your own self-imposed limitations. If you're looking around going, it's so unfair right now, you are so fucked up in the head. That should be the last thing you're focused on. Doesn't matter that you're right. It doesn't matter. The system's predatory. Correct. It doesn't matter. The way things are is what matters. But what you have still in this country is more opportunity than anywhere else. Where else do people line up to get into?
Well, the people want to get into Europe and they want to get in Australia, New Zealand.
Sure they do, because that's the place they can get to. And they're in a third world shithole, and that's a move up. So I would want to move up too. But how many Americans want to go actually move to Europe for more economic freedom? That's why they're going. Oh, you don't know anybody, do you? Okay. But how many people want to come to America for more economic freedom? Everybody. Everybody. People that are poor, that really just want to work, and billionaires. Think about how crazy that is. The poorest want to be here for economic opportunity, and billionaires want to be here for economic opportunity.
You're a shill for the billionaires. You suck Elon's dong. I've heard it all. I don't care.
You people bore me at this point. I didn't say the billionaires were a wonderful group of people, right? What I'm making is an observation. You can't get more divergent than below the poverty line and billionaire, and this is the only country that both of those classes of people want to be in. And most of the people say America sucks, live in America, and you haven't ever been anywhere else except as a fucking tourist, and you don't know shit. Most of you people that say that, if I gave you $50,000 cash and dropped your ass in the EU or Central America or Australia, you'd be poor and destitute in 6 months, and you'd be crying about how unfair it is there, and you'd be begging to come back. Or you can quit whining and start building. Because again, that's the title of today's show. There's no exit. There's no way out. There's no back door. You're not getting out. You're not building a parallel society. You can build a gray market and you can benefit from it. You can build individual community and you can benefit from it, and you should, but you're not getting out. Spaceship Earth. We're going to go live on Mars. Good fucking luck with that. Even if we successfully terraform Mars at some point, and that is a big ass if, even if we build a self-sustaining civilization on Mars, nobody alive today will see it. It's a 5-century process. Maybe not to have a civilization there, but to have like where you can like take your helmet off and not die. By the way, even if you do it, you know what the temperatures are going to be at night in the best part? You can't even imagine. And you need to go look at like the rotation period of Mars, right? So my point is, for you, there's no place to go. You live in the freest nation when every nation has its own form of what I guess you would call a percentile of slavery. Like, I believe that if you pay 30% of your income to the government, you are a 30% slave. That's what you are. Somebody owns the output of your labor. The very definition of slavery, you're a fractional slave. That's what I was looking for, fractional. But you can either build a really great life with that, and you can cut the fraction through smart tax strategy and smart lifestyle planning. Or you can bitch about it and see if your problem goes away. Because most of your problems are not going to go away. Ever. This is reality. This is what I want to finish with. As I said, Laws of Life Book 2, which is coming, I believe it's June 22nd. There'll be an official announcement by tomorrow when that book's actually coming out. Because I might push it out another week. I think I'm going to, given I've got this vacation coming up and all. I want to do a really good kind of ramp up to release on it. But Laws of Life Book 2, Law 10, what will happen is more powerful than what should. And I open that chapter with two quotes, and I want to give them to you now. Okay? And I hope they kind of encapsulate everything that we've talked about today. The first is from Charlie Munger. And Charlie said, never, ever think about something else when you should be thinking about the power of incentives. See, the problem is that most people think they're following the incentives. And what you're actually following is the incentive that they want you to follow, the carrot that's on the stick dangling in front of the donkey that the donkey will never get to. And maybe eventually when you get to where you want to be, maybe you give the donkey a carrot, right? But in the end, that incentive is very much benefiting the person holding the stick with the carrot at the end of it, not the donkey. That's the incentive most people. Like, go ahead and get into debt because it's an inflationary economy, so you benefit when you hold debt. When you hold it properly, you do, but that's not what most people do, and most people take that as a license to run up the credit cards and buy a house they can't afford, right? So they're following the surface incentive. The wealthy are following the deep incentive. The wealthy are following the incentive of buy and hold and never sell assets, leverage assets for tax-free cash flow, and use that cash flow to buy more assets. That's the real incentive. That's the deep incentive. And you following the surface incentive, right? That surface incentive lets them make their deep incentive more effective. Because our philosophy is you save your whole life, you buy as many assets as you can, and then in retirement, you slowly sell them off piece by piece. Who's buying them? Who's buying your incentives with other people's money that's tax-free as cash flow to them when you retire? The very people you think you're fighting against. That's what's happening. They're not evil for doing it. They're just following the deep incentive. Hold assets and never sell unless you absolutely have to. If you're selling an asset, the only really good reason to do so is, A, you have no choice and you need the cash, and there's no other way to get to it that works. Or B, you're going to use the cash to upgrade the asset to a higher class of asset. Why do you think they invented the 1301 real estate rollover? You think they did that because they wanted you to benefit? No, they did it because most people in Congress are landlords. And it's highly beneficial to them. It was actually a specific senator, I think from Minnesota or Michigan, that was the kind of the grandfather of that. And it was specific because he knew it would benefit him. But then, like, the way he sold it to all his buddies was, hey, don't you guys all have property too? Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, when you're a senator and you write legislation, you kind of write it so it benefits you. That's how that works, right? Or your lobbyist gives it to you because it benefits them and they pay you money so it benefits you. There's your incentives, right? So most of you would be able to see everything as clearly as I do. You'd have a track record like mine if you would just learn to look for the real incentives. What are the real incentives versus the artificial incentives that they create to rage bait you into your latest thing you're angry about? That I'm going to tell you again, whatever you're really fucking angry about today, that you're really upset about today, in a year, you won't even think about it. And just ask yourself, how many times has that happened? Remember how important it was to debate statues? Remember the statues? Remember I said, no one's going to give a fuck in a year. Have you heard anything about the evil statues or the people that were championing the statues? Their history. These people were like literally physically threatening each other over a statue that 2 weeks prior, neither of them had even known existed. That's how easy it is to fuck with people. And what was the real incentive there? To create a big argument, a big fight, a bunch of things to change the political climate, but it had no meaningful impact on anything, did it? I'm just saying. Now, my other quote for you. Philip K. Dick. No, he's a real person. It's not a joke about dicks, right? Philip K. Dick said, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. See, so many of these things, they were reality for people, and then when they stopped believing in them, they just went away. So they were never actual reality. Reality is the thing that when you stop believing it, doesn't go away. So when you stop believing that the government is wasting your money because your guy won, it doesn't go away and your money still gets wasted. That's reality, right? The rich getting richer is reality, but it's directly related to Charlie Munger's incentives comment. They're following the deep incentive, you're following the surface incentive. If you understand the incentives and you follow the true incentives that benefit you by doing so, and you understand that reality is the thing that exists even when you stop believing in it, because even when you stop believing it, the thing still happens, right? There's so many things that you believed over the last 20 years that we journeyed together, 18, that you were sure were real, but when you quit worrying about them, they went away and nothing happened. They were never real. If they were real, you ceasing to pay attention and care would not have made them go away. They would still be here. And when you looked, you'd see all the horrible things you thought they were going to create over a 5-year period that you were upset about 5 years ago, but now it's gone. I know this is hard to hear,
I know that people, we like to be outraged. We like to be upset. And God knows that the government, the state, gives us so many things to be angry about that are real. But they love it when you're angry about things that aren't real. Because when you're chasing a ghost, they're free to actually do the thing they claim the ghost is doing. I'm sorry if you don't like it, but it is the way that things are. With that, let's go ahead and hit some of these questions and comments. I only have four. I have two from Ernie, one from Humble Mechanic, and another from Ernie. So if you're not Ernie or Humble and you want me to comment on something or answer a question, now would be the time. Last call for questions and comments. Here we go. Ernie says, Jack, do you think there's a competition with China in what the data centers is more about? Yes. In fact, I shared a video today. I was going to play it on the air, but I'm not going to today. I don't want to make the show longer. It's about a 4 or 5 minute video from Kevin O'Leary. Kevin, of course, is famous from Shark Tank. He's a billionaire, but he's behind one of the data centers being built in Utah. And they start seeing all of this like grassroots swell pushing back on their data center. But they start to notice like there's all these like handles that repeat over and over on the social media and everything. And he's got something like 12 million followers. So he's put this out to all his followers now about what's going on. So they start researching like all the back end of it. And it's purely fucking criminal. And it all traces back eventually to the CCP in China. All these organizations, because there's tax filings of where the organizations are, where the money comes from. And these organizations that look closer to the grassroots level, their money's all coming from an intermediary organization that has its roots with the CCP. Like all of it. All of it. So China is actually behind you screaming, shrieking, and yelling about data centers. Why? Who benefits the most from slowing down AI progress in the United States? You think you do? Okay. I would tell you that the only superpower left in the world other than ours that wants to dominate the space, they're the ones that benefit the most from it. And somebody said today, that's just two superpowers working to see who can control with social. China has social fucking credit, guys. Like bad. Like Black Mirror level shit. They didn't need data centers to do it. Not the data centers you're worried about. They want to dominate and control the space. It's the future. They know it. And they know that we are their only real competition in the space. Believe what you want. But, you know, Ernie asked, so that's the answer I have. Ernie also said, what do you think about the idea of a family compound homestead as a solution? Great. Go do it. Go do it. See, what I find is most people that say that, what they really want is you to do it, and then they want to be part of it. If you can build with your own family and your community to a degree, great. But what I have found is that young people tend to want advancement, and advancement generally doesn't come from way out in the sticks. So unless you're going to build an actual operating company where you can employ your family members, good luck. Or you could find a big enough piece of property in kind of like an area like I'm in where everybody can have jobs and have the compound, great. But I think that there's a lot more talk of these things than there is doing of these things. And I think there's a reason. I think that we like autonomy as individuals. We might love our families, but you know, I love my son and my grandchildren and my daughter-in-law. We're about to take a 2-week vacation together. You have to really care about family to take a 2-week vacation together. But we, even when we vacation, we maintain autonomy. So initially my wife's like, what if we just rented a great big van so we could all, two separate vehicles, period. Right. And we have an Airbnb together. We got a 2-story. Basically, yeah, we'll all be together and everything. But basically, there's like a downstairs and an upstairs. And you guys have this area and we have that area when we want our own space. Right. So even there, we're doing that. But you know what I don't want? I don't want my son, my daughter, and my grandchildren living in my house with me. I wouldn't mind if they lived across the street. But I also have family members that I really wish they were physically closer, but I don't want them across the street, if you know what I mean. 4 or 5 miles down the road, that would be a little bit better. We like autonomy as individuals. We like living in our own homes. We like having our own cars. Remember, it's the state and the globalists that said you will own nothing and be happy. So I don't think communalism as a model fights that very well. So if everything works out, if you have 40 acres and you're talking about 12 people, which is really four households or five households, and everybody kind of has their own place on there, then that's great if you can make it work. But most families, you don't have the desire for that. The children want to go do something, as they should. As they should. I have a very good friend in this community that's upset right now because his son wants to take a job. His son's 18. He wants him to stay and work in his business, but his business doesn't make enough money to pay him a really decent wage yet. You want that kid to go out. Like, I'll tell you, a person that is in this community whose son just went to work with him is John Pugliano. And his son is in his early 30s. But he has now 12 years of experience working in the world. I would much rather, if my son was going to come work in one of my businesses, him go work for somebody else for a while. Because then when he comes back and works in my business, he's going to have a whole different skill set than I have, which is what I want in my business. Plus, he's going to have a certain sense of like realizing how good it really is to work for your old man in a way that a kid that grows up and goes right to work for his old man would never understand. So I think it's a good idea if you can make it work. And I'm not saying you can't. I'm saying that it's a lot easier to say than do. It's like a lot of these AI videos, like these housing videos, like, you know, these two people were geniuses. They turned these shipping containers into a house. That house doesn't exist. And you see that like coming in and like all being formed in this beautiful house being built in time lapse. And there's no house. And there's never going to be that house. That's fantasy. And I think a lot of the things that we conjure in our minds take that same role. We write that AI video in our own brains because our brains are supercomputers, and they certainly have the ability to generate literally movies. That's what, if you think about it, that's what a freaking dream is. A dream is a mental movie that you star in, right? So we can do that to ourselves, whether we're conscious of it or not. Humble Mechanic says, ha ha, I'm doing my taxes from last year as I listen to this. Lot of pretty dope deductions I wouldn't get if I worked a job. Exactly. You don't know how unfair the tax code is if you've never run a business, because you've never actually figured out how to work the code, so you don't know what's hidden from you. I know not everybody's going to run a business. And you need to make a lot more running a business than you think you do to replace your income in a business, because there's so many burdens that your employer is carrying that you're not aware of. Almost everybody that has health insurance through work, your work's paying some part of it. Even if you don't think they are, right? As a plan administrator or something like that. But, you know, there is a burden labor rate that most employees have no idea how much you actually cost. When we say, like, to give you a desk and the power portion that you're using and all, you know, what it costs to train you, what it costs to maintain your skill sets, et cetera, it's very high. And then that Social Security tax you're paying, remember, your employer matches that. So if you look, go, they took $100 from me this week or whatever, your employer paid an extra $100. So $200 went into that program that you may or may not get your money back out of at some point. You know, you could die young and get none of it. I was just thinking about how sad this was. It never really even hit me. I was trying to remember how old my grandmother Rose on my mom's side was when she passed away. And I believe she was 68. And that meant that I remember she was very excited when she finally got to draw Social Security. And she waited till 65 so she would get, you know, the better payout. And that means she paid in her whole life and collected for 3 years and died. And her employer matched it for all those years as well. That's reality. And you won't ever really understand it until when you have to pay your own matching. And then you turn around and deduct it from your federal income. A lot of things click for you. Or when you run a company with 1,200 contractors in it and you run payroll and you're on the end that's actually making the payments like I used to do, you see it there too. But yeah, let's move on here, Ernie. And I don't know if we have any came in, but I'll check real quick. But this is really last call for questions. Do you think we are going to gold, silver, Bitcoin backed system once we exit out of a fiat currency backed by nothing? No, I don't. I don't. And I don't think we are going to have a gold, silver, Bitcoin basket or any one of those commodities back our current currency. for that to happen, you have to have a complete and total destruction of the fiat currency system globally. Because that's what you'll get if you do it. If you switch to a gold-backed currency now, literally everything is built on a system of credit backed by nothing and backed by leveraged debt against other leveraged debt. This is the same reason we can't actually solve the housing problem. If you solve the housing problem, many billionaires become very poor overnight, but so do many millionaires, and so do many people who don't even have $1 million to speak of, but they're just kind of starting out in life. And that's what happens if we start building more houses for less money, smaller footprints, etc. That's why the holdup's there. So as bad as that would be economically, and it might be good for the person that can finally buy a house, but that problem has to be decoupled from very, very slowly. And Trump's admitted this. If we start building lots of houses, a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money. That's what that meant when he said that. And I know you don't want to accept this, but he's right. And when this is something I think you have to realize. When we have these giant things that affect the billionaires, it hurts us too. We are all in it together in a way. Not the way they mean it when they say it, but we are an interconnected economic system. So if going to a Bitcoin-backed dollar would destroy that and cause all that pain, you'd only do it after it was either completely destroyed or so close to going over anyway. And no one would want to be the one that did it because they would get the blame when it happened. So right now we have a game of hot potato. Everybody's trying to pass the potato. Everybody wants to be in charge, but nobody wants to be in charge when it collapses. And so they will do everything they can to string it together for a time. They really will. All right, let's go ahead and see if any other questions came in while I was doing that. Okay, Ashley Campbell, so I know I'm all the way back to where I started. Okay, the chemo cop, what would your biggest concern be if a data center was around 7 miles from your homestead? Nothing. I would have no concerns. It's a building with computers in it. I saw AOC, and she had a jar with dirt in it. Yes, because when you break ground and you have shallow wells in the area, you can create stirred up sediment that eventually settles back out. It's not ruined forever. That's not how that works. The wastewater that comes out of a data center, if there's much of it at all, goes into the same place your shit goes. It goes into the sewer system. It goes to the treatment plant. It doesn't go out on a pipe into the frickin' driveway. It goes where all effluent goes, where your shit goes, where your piss goes. When you flush your kid's dead fish down the toilet, it goes there. And yes, older data centers did not use recirculating recapture. Almost everything being built from this point forward is using largely recirculatory systems because it costs less money. So it's literally not even the draw on the water supply that it's claimed to be. It's like asking me, what would you do if they built a bowling alley? Or what would you do if they built a Bitcoin mining center 7 miles from where you are? I would go take a tour. I would think about putting some mining rigs in it. It's the same thing. Didn't you? All this shit you're hearing now, right? I get what you're saying about surveillance, okay? And we can have that discussion separately. But the environmental impact concerns, same shit they said. Bitcoin is going to boil the oceans, take all the water, take all the electricity. In 5 years, this was said in 2017, 5 years from now, Bitcoin will use all the energy that we make in the whole country. That's all bullshit. Can you not see that at least potentially this is too? Can you not see that? Okay. Then Arizona Copper Penny, are you still needing emails about food? Yes. TSPC Food, send me the low-cost things, especially if you're, you know, your late 40s and your 50s, 60s, you know, during the 70s and 80s that your grandma or your mom or whatever made that was like cheap food, but you loved it as a kid. I got a ton. And I think that we will probably not do that show until I get back from vacation because I'm already working on rewinds for next week. The only show next week that's not a rewind
is going to be the Brad Thor show on Monday, unless that falls apart. And I have a track record of big guests saying they're in and then not being in. So we'll see. I had the CEO of Pelican lined up at one point, and then all of a sudden it wasn't worth doing or whatever. I don't know. They changed their initiative. They were going to go after the prepper market and then decided they didn't want to. So as long as that happens, that'll be the only one. If Brad pulls up on me, then I'll probably do the food show Monday. Otherwise, it'll be like 2 weeks out. So I still have plenty of time. TSPC food in the subject line and tell me about it. You know, you don't write me a book, but you know, a paragraph or so about what it was and what you loved about it. There's some really cool stuff that's come in on that. And I think people like to, you know, have that nostalgic look at things. And I'm going through looking for more questions. I don't see any. No kidding. Question. Are you still looking for, that's the same question twice. So no, I already answered it and keep going. That's it. That's all I got. So we are going to wrap up. I hope you enjoyed today's show, even if you had to hear some things you didn't want to hear. Again, I wasn't bragging when I went through that, what is it, like a 20-point list of things. If you're going to say, this is my opinion, this is what it's based on, you could stop worrying about this thing, and you better start worrying about these things. If you can't back that up, and not with like a one-off, like everybody's right once in a while. The shit that I laid out for you today, it's all real. Many of you remember it. Some of you have been around since 2008, and you remember me saying it, and you remember being mad at me. I'm just saying I'm applying the same logic here that I applied to all those instances. Jade Helm, right? The global warming hysteria, you know, the Bitcoin boiling the oceans, like all of this shit was just nonsense. It was always nonsense. And then there's things that, like, it's just pure pattern recognition. The 2016 Republican strongman, that was almost a little too, that freaked me out how on the nose that was. I'm just saying that there is a track record here. The Gasland con job, right? This looks very similar to what's being done today. Oh, by the way, if you trace the money behind that, you know where it goes? China. You know what China was afraid of in 2010 when that propaganda came out? The U.S. becoming energy independent. Because that gives us certain advantages when we have energy independence. And the United States right now, I don't care what anybody tells you, we are energy independent. Then why'd our gas go up? Because oil and gas is a global market, and if Exxon can make more money by selling some of their shit to Europe, they'll do it. That's why. That's why. Because not everybody else is, because that's why. There's a track record here. I stand behind it, and I have always come out and admitted when I was wrong as well. So don't worry. If I end up being wrong about this, if data centers destroy the water table and we have no farms left because every inch of farm and ranch land is turned into a data center, and that's what some of you people are saying, it makes no sense. If I'm wrong about boom, blunt, bust, I'll come back and say Jack was wrong. But I'm going to tell you, in 5 years, there's going to be data centers that are being decommissioned because they're going to be overbuilt. So somebody told me today, the difference between that and the dark fiber is right now, when they turn up a data center, every GPU is just spinning all the time. I can't even have a conversation with that person. You don't know how any of this works. 3 acres under a roof. It's just always spinning immediately. They flip the switch. They all start spinning. That's how Bitcoin mining with ASICs work. By the way, ASICs use a lot more electricity than GPUs, which is what's running these data centers. Again, I'm not defending the government here. I'm not defending surveillance. I'm talking about the reality of what a building full of computers is and what it isn't. Like, they're emitting radiation. You say on the phone you're holding up to your head. My God. Right? You say on Facebook, which runs massive data centers. You say on Facebook you're worried about surveillance. You don't even use the most basic privacy technology. You're not using the browser plugin that I recommend, Facebook Container. You're not even asking yourself why it exists in the first place. You don't have a VPN. You have all your data on freaking Google Docs or AWS or some shit. You have these people have no privacy protection. You're on an iPhone broadcasting your existence everywhere you go. You never even put the fucking thing down and leave it at home and leave the house. You always have it with you. You're always being tracked. And then you're going to turn to me and tell me about surveillance? I'm the one running privacy tech, guys. And I suggest you do too. but you still won't stop this. But you can build an incredible life in spite of it. I've been giving you that message for almost 2 decades, and I have no plans to stop, even if it makes you mad at me. I will be wrong, but it will be the minority of the time, and I will always tell you what I really think. The most ridiculous thing I've heard in this about the data center thing is he's just doing it to get more attention and get more followers. You know, when 90% of the people who follow you hate what you're saying and you hate it anyway, you're not doing it to get more followers, folks. That doesn't logically track in any way, shape, or form, does it? When you're willing to risk what you have to tell people something, and trust me, I'm not important enough. You know, Kevin O'Leary's not paying me. I'm not on Donald Trump's fucking payroll. Okay? Right? Like, Planetary is not paying us. They're not a behind-the-scenes sponsor. The government of China is not fucking paying us. We're not shills or simps for anything. I'm telling you what I think because I made you a promise on June 20th, 2008. I made you a promise that I've never broken. I will always tell you the truth as I see it. I will always tell you what I think, and I will never let the fact that it might harm me prevent me from speaking the truth and my opinion as I see it while I reserve the right to be wrong. I made that commitment almost 18 years ago. I'm not about to start fucking breaking it because you threw a shit fit on X. I'm not. Real quick before I wrap up, I do have something to sell you today. It's not a data center. It's not an AI course. It's not an AI anything. It's as old school as it gets. It's the Victorinox 6-inch semi-stiff boning knife. Now, I know a lot of you are my age. A lot of you remember watching Beavis and Butthead in the 90s when MTV actually had music on it, right? And I know when you say semi-stiff boning in order, a lot of you want to go, don't. This is a legitimate product. This is one of the best kitchen knives, meat working knives, you will ever meat working. I don't, stop it. Stop being that person. David, I know you're giggling right now. Everybody knows who David is. Yes, most of you know who David is. But this is the knife that more people that professionally cut meat use than any other knife. Breaking knives, like 10, 12-inch breaking knives, they all have a place. But when it comes to like fine work, this is the knife. Anything from I just used this knife and I parted out an entire chuck roll into like Chuck Eye's Denver steaks, into stir fry meat, into chuck steaks, a bunch of other things, and about 12 pounds of ground. I did cut some of the bigger pieces with my breaking knife, but I did 90% of the work with this. This is what I would bone a chicken thigh with. This is what I would use to trim silver skin off venison. Like, you name it, this is the knife for it. And the semi-stiff part of it basically gives you enough flex to be able to do things like that, but enough stiffness to actually stand up and do a really good job instead of basically being a fillet knife, right? This is like halfway between a slicing knife and a fillet knife in its stiffness. That's why it's built that way. That's why the most people use it. Well, it's on sale today for 33% off. And I looked, and the stock number was pretty low. So I actually decided I want another one of these in my life. So I ordered one today before I put it out. And this they may sell out of inventory today. For some reason, this knife frequently sells out. Then it comes back. Then they jack the price up. And then they put it on sale, and it sells out again. So this is the time to pick one up if you don't have one yet. With that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. I hope you're excited about the big announcement for Monday next week. Hopefully I won't go check my email and be like, oh, we've had to let's just pretend that's not going to happen, because having Brad Thor on this show will be another one of those like landmark interviews for me. That will be equivalent to like I had Ron Paul on, I had Adam Curry on, I had Gary Vaynerchuk on. It's kind of that level. Jim Shockey, right? That's that level of an interview, really a level up for us. And I hope you guys tune in. If you've never heard of Brad and you like kind of like the Tom Clancy novel type thing, like the spy novel type thing, I think you'll really enjoy reading his books, and you'll get to hear from him himself on Monday. Tomorrow we have an interview, then we'll have our Thursday show. And basically we are into my announcement that we're going to have three-day weeks from now on. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is going to be our main schedule. you're going to get that extra show on next week on Monday because I want that interview. And I'll tell you this as well. Even though we go to like a 3-day week, if there's some big explosive thing over a weekend, I can always jump on and do an extra show that week. And I always will, because I do care about bringing you the truth, the logic, the reality, and the pattern recognition that I've always promised you. If you're upset at me today, I'm sorry, but I won't break my promise to not hurt your feelings. Take care, guys, and have a great day.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.